Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense and operated by Carnegie Mellon University. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcast. My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm a principal researcher here at the SEI. Today, I am very pleased to introduce you to Julien Delange, who is a researcher here at the SEI since November of 2012. Julien's work focuses on the Architecture Analysis and Design Language, also called AADL. Before joining the SEI, he worked as a software engineer at the European Space Agency, where he led and contributed to several research projects related to software and system architectures. He also has a PhD from Telecom Paris Tech in France and developed the real-time operating system called POK for building safe and secure systems, something that's very important for both space and many other areas of our work. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about two new developments with the Architecture Analysis and Design Language, the Behavior Annex and the Error Model Annex. Welcome, Julien.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
Absolutely. Julien, let's start off by having you give us a little background on Architecture Analysis and Design Language. I know we've interviewed you and Peter Feiler before for this work, but please explain a little bit about it for those who are not familiar with AADL as it is commonly known.
Well, so AADL is a language, and we start many years ago, and the first version was out in 2003. And we made a new version in 2008. The main goal of AADL is to capture software and system concerns. So for example, the different interfaces between the system, the data, also the different type of component, if this is a device, a software component like a task, a process, the non-functional properties, for example, if you have a periodic task, a sporadic task, the timing aspect, how fast a device will send the data, and so on.
But the thing that I know about AADL that I think makes it very important to many of our listeners is that unlike other languages that work at system level, you can have multiple levels of abstraction of the components that you are putting into a model that is based on AADL. So if I only know a little bit about timing, I can put in what I know, and if I know a lot about particular internal interfaces, I can put that detail in there too. So having those different levels of abstraction available and allowing you to increase the data as you go to improve the model, that's a unique aspect of AADL that I think our listeners would be very interested in.
That's correct. This is what we call the incremental modeling aspect, meaning that you start with a really high-level description, and then when you go through the development process, you refine the component description, and you enrich the specification and add more detail and properties. In that aspect, AADL is a unique language. Also, we use this unique capability of AADL in different projects. Like, we have a project that is called SAVI.
What does SAVI stand for?
So SAVI is System Architecture Virtual Integration. And the goal of SAVI is to make use of different modeling language to design avionics architecture. So we are, in fact, at the SEI, we are taking part of SAVI, and we are applying AADL techniques to design and develop avionics architecture. So far, we use AADL to design avionics architecture and analyze different aspects and what we call quality attributes, like performance, latency, safety, and so on.
So with these most recent additions to AADL, the Behavior Annex and the Error Model Annex, you're extending the capabilities for incremental modeling and for interacting with other kinds of modeling languages so that you can get a better picture of what's going on with the system you're trying to model. Yes?
That's correct. So far we have many different annex in the language, and you can define your own annex. At the SEI last year, we developed the Error Model Annex, and we also designed new tools to analyze the system from a safety perspective. So for example, when you start to develop your architecture, you can define the error propagation, what kind of error you have in your system. For example, a device can send an invalid data, a bad value, can send a value too late or too early. And in fact, this kind of issue, you want to capture that and to see the impact of this error across the architecture.
And these kinds of things were difficult to model in other languages in the context of the larger system. So one of the things that is really important about AADL is that it's helping to bridge the gap between the software engineering architecture and the systems architecture.
That's correct. And also something that is very unique is we have all these specifications in the same language, the same model. We don't have different models. So we can capture the different inconsistencies in this single model. So we have different annex. Mostly the last year we developed the error model annex at the SCI, and the goal of these annexes to define the safety concerns of your system. So you can start with this high-level component and say what kind of different fault you have, but having the all the different aspects of your system in a single notation also bring you the ability to check the consistency between different aspects of your system. For example, if you have a late value, this is an error, but this error can be triggered by a bad behavior specification. In other words, if you take too much time to compute a data, it can result in a late value. So you will have this error propagation and you can see the impact. This is really important because in fact, it turns out that most of the issue of your system are in the specification when you design the system in the architecture. So almost 70 to 80% of the faults and the errors of the system are found in the design. But the thing is, you will test your system and you will find exactly where the error happens in the testing. In other words,
which is much later
exactly
in the life cycle. So
exactly.
What this is doing is it's allowing us to bring that error detection much earlier in system design and allow you to make design choices that prevent certain kinds of errors that you really couldn't do before.
Exactly, because I will try to just describe one problem in a project. For example, in the project Ariane 5, this is a European project, and they have a rocket, and they launch the rocket and so on, and they reuse the software for Ariane 4. And in fact, the problem is that when they reuse the software, they didn't expect to have a change in the value in the interface. And because of that, the software failed and the rocket exploded. So just because of that, you have to check when you integrate the system, you have to check that your system can work. And most of the time, it happens that you discover such error as the integration during the integration testing campaign when you do some tests.
Right.
And
that's very expensive, as well as if you have a catastrophic failure, it really puts the whole schedule and the project in jeopardy if that happens. So if you can model those behaviors, and I mean, what you said about this all being in a single model, I don't know, if you're not in system design, you may not really understand that what typically happens is there are multiple models that deal with different specialties related to the system, and the integration of those models into something that can be used to do end-to-end simulation is almost a whole project in and of itself.
Yeah.
So this move towards being able to not only model the basic behavior, the intended behavior, but also to model potential errors is really, in my mind, a huge breakthrough in system modeling.
Yeah, this is also something we are working on right now. It's in fact, for you have different models for different domain of engineering, meaning that, for example, many people will use Simulink because Simulink is really convenient.
Yes, Simulink is, it's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But you want also to make sure that your architectural model is consistent with your Simulink model. So what we are working right now is to check that your ADL model, the architecture model, is compliant with the Simulink model you can develop early on. Also, something most of the time when you want to make a rapid prototyping of your system, you make a Simulink model. You know, you test and everything, it works, okay. But after that, you want to move on and start the architecture model. So what we are doing right now is, we describe that process in a blog post recently, is you take your Simulink model and you can start an ADR skeleton model, mm-hmm. okay, by importing this Simulink model, right. And then you can refine it and define what is the execution platform, what are the different processors and buses and all this kind of thing, and add later on the timing specification of your system. And then you can start to make a latency analysis, and then you start to add also some error specification, and you can see the fault propagation and so on. So it's really an incremental process.
Yes.
You can start early on by having a high-level description, import that into an ADL model, start to make some analysis and so on. And with the model, you can really find errors from the specification. And before all implementation effort, you can start to discover a lot of issues. We're also working on a new project that will help us to define the architecture issue from the early architecture. In other words, when you import the Simulink model, mm-hmm. you have an ADL model, and it will highlight some architecture issue.
Okay.
For example, if you have nested state machine, in that case, you might need to share some global variable.
Okay.
And for example, global variable can be a major issue when you start to validate your system, because this is really difficult to track who is modifying.
Where is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Where is it in the system at any point in time?
Who is modifying the data, who modifies the data, and so on. So you want to avoid this kind of thing. And you can...
And that's a security issue as much as anything else.
Exactly.
So there's lots of implications for some of these architectural decisions.
Exactly. So you can in fact detect this kind of architecture problem and then propose some alternative design. And thing is, it's really important when you modify your system and update your system, because early on, 20 years ago, global variable was a common pattern for performance.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's really convenient. But right now it's a problem because performance is no longer so big issue.
Our hardware has really accelerated, so we're not looking for the software to give us all the performance advantages that we did 20 years ago.
But we are really careful because the size of the software grow so much that it's so difficult to check who access the data
right.
or not. So using some practice like encapsulation, control who is accessing the data and so on, it's really better to use that. So when you change the software and update the software, you can adapt your architecture and use some common practice to
right.
encapsulate the data and so on. So there is different architecture pattern we can detect, good and bad architecture pattern you can try to detect.
And this is work, I mean, the nice synergy here is the SEI has been working with architectural patterns and architectural issues for many, many years. So there's a lot of expertise inside the SEI that can help with identifying some of the issues that need to be incorporated into this kind of analysis.
Yeah,
so that's really very synergistic.
Yeah, and we have a lot of people interested by this approach, especially in the safety critical domain,
sure.
because if you think about all the military system, all the aerospace systems, they have to be updated periodically, and also when they make a new version of the system, they are updating the software, but they have to maintain it for 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, we know of some that are
old,
yes.
And we have a lot
and still flying.
Yeah, and we have a lot of interest from the Avionics community, but right now, also, Avionics community was a really... many people from the Avionics community were interested by ADR because they have a certification process.
Sure,
development
airworthiness
process.
Certification,
exactly.
Yes.
But right now, the automotive domain start to really have an interest into this technology,
yes.
but also the FDA. We have a lot of interest from other domain as well.
Well, and our listeners may not realize that AADL is a language of the Society of Automotive Engineering. So it is actually an international standard, and it is governed by a committee that the SEI is very active on, So it is very appropriate that the automotive domain start paying attention to it, yeah. I think. And speaking of the AADL committee, you just recently returned from the meeting with the AADL committee. And is this new project what has been decided that the committee is going to be working on? Or are there other things you want to tell us about what's going on with the standards aspect of the language?
Yeah, so there is three things I'm really excited about. First of all, AADL need a graphical editor, the tools in itself. So far...
It needs better graphical tools.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with that.
So far, the notation of... So we have two notations in AADL, the graphical and the textual. And so far, we use mostly the textual notation. And textual is really convenient when you know the language, but for new...
For learning the language, it's very challenging.
So right now, we have a new project for graphical editors that works really well, and we integrated nice. That into the stable release of the AADL tool OZATE that we developed at the SCI. We are really excited about it because it works pretty well, is already used by many users, and we will develop new feature, new, and it's really good because it will, many new people can learn AADL right. really easily. And so another project we are really excited about is to capture different network architecture. For example, all the network in the automotive domain like CAN, or also all the networks, industry network in the avionics domain. And something, finally, the last project I'm really excited about is the code generation from AADL. This is something I work
on. Code generation. Here we go again. Yeah. Everybody wants to do code generation.
No, but if you think a little bit about it. So I work on that topic when I did my thesis so far ago. But the really nice aspect of it is... We go from really high-level description to go down to the code. If you think about it, this is what we do with C. We abstract the assembly language in C. And then with Ada, what we did is that we abstract more, for example, the tasking issue. And then you can make some more checking. For example, if you apply what we call the Ravenscare profile on Ada, you can have, for example, you have to use mutexes, PCP protocol to provide many safety issues. But so right now we abstract the software with a model and we generate the code. So we abstract all the big concerns of the system and we can make sure by validating the model early on, we avoid any security or safety issue. And then we'll make the software production better. In fact, if you think about it, what we do with language, we abstract the main language, the main concerns.
Yeah.
Try to validate that to ensure that you have no problem in your language, no indeterminism and so on, and then you generate the code. And I think this is a way to go to generate more safe and secure systems.
So the reason earlier that I said, here we go again, is we've seen at the SCI multiple attempts to do code generation, and some of them in specific domains have worked quite well. But it also has its own set of difficulties in terms of bloat and other kinds of issues that come up when you're trying to be much more deterministic without knowing the whole context. So
yeah.
I'm going to be very interested to see how AADL deals with some of those kinds of issues as this project progresses.
So far, I think... just for safety critical system, it's really doable because the semantics and the code patterns are really common most of the time.
Well, and yeah, you've got restrictions on them. You've got enough constraints. This may be a domain where you actually have enough constraints that it's more feasible to do that. So that's very. This is very exciting. I think this is some of my favorite work at the SCI. Those of you that have listened to me before have heard me say that. And I really want to thank you, Julianne, for joining us today and catching us up on what's been going on. Those of you that have not used AADL before, I do encourage you to go to the wiki site, www.aadl.info. That's where you can get information about OSATE, which is the implementation tool set that the SCI has developed, as well as reading about the standard itself. And go try it. If you, especially, if you're in safety critical systems, I hope you're already using it.
And also, we have the graphical editor right now.
And
so
now
it's
you,
more
yes,
convenient.
Right, the graphical interface. So you're finally going to get to go beyond text. All right. So, and to read the series of blog posts that Julian referred to, along with Peter Feiler, please visit blog.sei.cmu.edu and click on Architecture Analysis and Design Language. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcast and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you for listening.